if you do not understand white supremacy, what it is, and right, how it works, everything else that you do understand will confuse you. In all of these nine areas of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Anywhere on the planet, minute by minute, day by day, all of the time, all of the time, all of the time.
Okay, let me say good morning. This would be the 12th of October, 2021. Good morning, and you are now in contact with the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. I am your co-host, Mr. Bobby, and welcome to today's programming of the Counter Racist Code Show. To get in contact with the show, you may simply dial 516-453-9921. You want to press the number 1 button if you have a question or a quick VGQ for Mr. Fuller to address. He will do that. You can also Gmail me at the numeral 7, Mr. Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, at gmail.com. And occasionally, I will have an opportunity to read a Gmail. If not, it will also go into rotation, and it will be read at a certain time, and I will inform you when that Gmail, when your Gmail is read. You can also go into the chat room, and there are some interesting chats that are there, if you'd like to do that and get with that community. Okay, I think those are out of the way. Let me start off by saying good morning, Mr. Fuller, and how are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm still learning.
Okay. Also, let me say this, Mr. Fuller. On my page, I indicated that that it was your birthday about 6 days ago, and people responded to that. At least 58 people wanted to respond to that. They don't say happy birthday anymore. They say happy birthday because you breathe every day, at least for right now. So happy birthday to you, Mr. Fuller, on behalf of me and on behalf of the 58 people that responded on my page. But there were probably more than that. Worldwide, the request came on you. Came in to bestow that upon you. So I just wanted you to be aware that people were kind enough and thinking about you on your very special day, Mr. Fuller.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And
okay.
Also, I would wish many, many, many birthdays for the people who are now breathing, and that they use those days to think about doing something or saying something or moving about in such a way that every day they produce something that has a constructive result.
Yes.
That they engage in some type of activity, that at the end of that day, that breath day that they have been given, that's a gift. That now, did I do anything today that produced any kind of constructive result of any kind? And every person on the planet, each and every day, according to compensatory logic, we're all given these days, minute by minute, every time you breathe, that's a gift. That's a gift. No effort was made to get it. So you appreciate that breath that you have. This COVID-19, I'd just like to interject this just for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
It is a threat all over the world because of what the experts and the doctors and the people who deal with it say. It's threatening your breath. They put all types of tubes and whatnot in a person or whatever they do, who are in the COVID-19 wards where they're trying to keep people breathing. They say that's the main thing they're trying to do, and that the people have great difficulty, the people who have caught COVID-19, great difficulty in doing what? In breathing. That's the first thing you do when you come here, and that's the last thing you do when you leave. You're breathing. So, you know, we talk about air pollution and all like that. Well, COVID-19 is air pollution. And they say you catch it by breathing in something that's been contaminated, air. And so it's just a thought. And so when we have these breath days, some people say they're birthdays, but you're only born one time, and you have a birthday. That's the day you're born, a birth date, according to the artificial calendars that are made by people, because time, you know, we don't know about that. When there was a beginning of time, we can't exactly measure the beginning of time. Not to my knowledge, anyway. Nobody has said, I knew exactly the moment that time began. Now, I haven't heard any scientists or anybody say that. So you come in to this area of the universe, and you breathe. So I just want to say that in connection with my breath days.
Yes,
I hope,
sir.
I have a few more left where I can do something of constructive value.
Yes, sir. Constructive results is what we are looking for. And let's start it off with this question from Dallas. We're going to go to Ray. Ray, let me see if I can get you in here. Okay, Ray, got you in. Good morning, and what is your question for Mr. Fuller?
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Fuller, is turmoil and affliction a compensation for non-white people as long as an explicit declaration of war is not made in all non-areas of people activity?
Is that a question?
Yes, sir.
And the question is what?
Is turmoil and affliction the compensation for non-white?
Well, wait a minute. I just want to get that first part. Is
turmoil
what?
And affliction. Turmoil and
turmoil,
affliction.
Turmoil and affliction.
Yes, sir. Yes,
all
sir.
All right, sir.
The compensation for non-white people, as long as an explicit declaration of war is not made in all nine areas of people activity.
Is turmoil and affliction in all nine areas of activity the
compensation?
Is the compensation.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
right.
It needs to be compensated for. I mean, that's the result. But that's not compensatory. Compensatory always leads to something that is going to produce philosophically and practically something that produces a constructive result, not just a result in the abstract, just, you know, something that happens as a result of something happening, and that happens. But when you have results, there's only two types of results in any activity, constructive, non-constructive. There's no such thing as in between. Every activity, everything, every motion that a person makes, just waving your hand, waving at somebody across the street, it's going to have a constructive result or a non-constructive result. Just waving, you know, and saying, hey, hi, good morning. Now, the person may resent the good morning coming from you and may appreciate it coming from someone else. So you might say that salutation produced a non-constructive result. And so you should always try to the best of your ability, produce a constructive result in any move that you make. And so in answer to that question, yes, all of the turmoil that's going on throughout the entire world of all types, not just racism, but just all of the drive-by shootings, the killings, somebody gets mad about something for 2 minutes, and then they do something that's going to change, alter the entire course of history for 50 or 60 people, all in 2 minutes' time, because somebody just got mad for 2 minutes. And then the anger wore off, and then all this devastation has happened in 2 minutes, 2 minutes' time. 12, 15, 30 people may be dead. Only kind of somebody got mad in a crowd about something or another and happened to have a firearm that would throw out that type of ammunition in 2 minutes, enough to kill 30 people. And they did it. And then a few minutes after that, 5 more minutes, the person says, who, him or herself? Oh, my goodness, now. You know, I did this. I got mad. And so I did this, and now I got to run. Or now I'm in big trouble because, you know, everybody saw me do it, and I can't get away, and I got caught. And so that's a non-constructive result. I mean, people should think. Compensatory codification is about first thing you do before you act, always think. Think about what? Think about the results that are going to play out, not just the first part of it, not just act one, like most people do. They got, you know, like if you're talking about a two-act play, I mean, act one, when any kind of trouble that you're heading for, that's pretty easy to get into. It's that act two that you didn't have a script for, and trying to wing it. Like you start a movie, I mean, you know, and halfway through it, you got millions of dollars invested, and then halfway through it, you say, now, I don't know how I'm going to, you know, do the rest of this movie. On opening night, on Broadway, you might say, you got a big play, I mean, millions and millions of dollars invested in it. Crowd is all out there, I mean, been lined up for hours, now they're in. So everybody goes in and they're seated, and you did that act one. Oh, it was superb. I mean, everybody on their feet. So they go out and get their popcorn or wherever they got to go, and they come back and take the seats. The lights get lowered again. Act two. And all of a sudden behind the stage, you say, where's the script? And everybody's running around looking, you know, and nobody's rehearsed for it and whatnot. Say, it's supposed to be an act two. We got all these thousands of people out there and whatnot, and we've been pumping it up for 18 months that this, you know, that this is a great opening night. Act two, no act two. And a lot of people on this planet right now, a lot of people today, they don't, what do I mean by act two? I mean thinking things all the way through. Not just what you're going to do the first part of something because you're mad or upset or you're deliriously happy about something. But are you going, you know, the first part of the morning, you're deliriously happy. That's act one. But what about the afternoon? Do you want to be deliriously sad or gloomy or whatever they want to call it? So existence on this planet is about thinking about constructive results in all of your acts. Act one, act two, act three, every move that you make in all nine areas of activity. That's a long-winded answer to the question.
Mm-hmm.
But I did a lot of padding on that, but I hope it's understood.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Ray from Dallas. Constructive results. Don't be a stranger. You're listening to the Counter-Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr. I am your co-host, Mr. Bobby. We are going to continue with Helen D. Helen D. from New York. Helen D., you are on with Mr. Fuller. What is your question?
Greetings, Mr. Bobby, Mr. Fuller. Might I suggest that you do an audio recording strictly on your movie list?
May you suggest what now?
That you do an audio recording strictly on your movie list. You know, just record your voice instead of writing all your comments down about the movie list that you have.
That's an idea, and I'll definitely consider that. And I am talking about to myself and have been planning and got a whole lot of notes. I got a ton of them on the lessons that are supposed to be learned when people look at the movie list. That movie list as it sits right now is a lot of people say, well, yes, there's a movie list, and I see it, and Fuller put it up there, and I've seen some of the movies. Well, I mean, I wasn't impressed with none of them, you know, and I stopped looking at them. I know it's a lot of people out there who probably have that position. And so at some point, I was supposed to have put the lessons that you look for, not in each movie, but in all the movies put together, all of the lessons. You look for all of these lessons because that's why I chose those movies, because there's all kinds of, you might say, hidden lessons that people can grab hold to. But I have to put something for them to grab, and I didn't do that so far. It took me forever just to get the list up there, but I finally put it up there because people kept insisting that I put the list up. But that list was supposed to have gone up with a long, 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 long list of the lessons to look for in all of those movies put together. But that's an excellent suggestion, and I am working on it. But I got so many irons in the fire. I mean, I'm like a cook. I'm like a cook in a real hot restaurant. and I got a ball stadium of people out there, and I'm the only cook who's trying to get stuff on the griddle. All the
yes,
rest
sir.
Of the cooks didn't come in.
Alrighty. Thank you, Helen D., for that suggestion. And you don't be a stranger to the program. Thank you very much. Adding to that list, Mr. Fuller, there's a good movie out that really deals with what we're trying to give the people. The movie is just the numeral 24. If you have seen, if not you, Mr. Fuller, but yeah, and you, if you get a chance, check that out and see what lessons that you can glean from that movie. It's the numeral 24. Is the movie about 90 minutes. Some might find it a little disturbing, but it deals directly with what Mr. Fuller is speaking about in terms of having constructive results, what to do, and so forth. From the Gmail, let me see if I can get this guy's name right. Nathaniel Bury wrote this. Now, Nathaniel, I'm only going to do one of your questions right now, and then maybe later on I'll have a chance to work it in. But anyway, here's his question to you, Mr. Fuller. He says, Mr. Fuller, was there a particular moment in your life that inspired you to diligently pay attention to words and so ask, quote, what do you mean when you say, end of quote?
Yes, 1957 in Japan. There was a sergeant there, a master sergeant, a black one. And I won't call his name because he may not want that if he's still around. But you're talking about many, many decades ago, 1957. I was in Japan, assigned to a supply unit in the military Air Force on what we call the Yama, which means mountain in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And place called Wajima Village on the west coast of Japan, facing the Korean and Russian borders across a body of water. And this sergeant was a stickler for words, and he used to always tell me, he said, you know, in his booming voice, I mean, Fuller, I don't particularly like your choice of words. And then he'd say, try these. And he would say something, and he would say a whole lot better than what I was trying to say. You know, I would be trying to, I stumble and fumble and whatnot, And he was saying, you're all over the place with your words, Fuller. Say, words, you know, should be precise. He said, now, another thing, your way of writing. You wrote 5 pages here, and you said large quantities of nothing and said it very well. He said, but he never made a criticism without making a suggestion. And that's one thing I can say about him. He had always angered me when he had criticized me. But he was teaching me, and I didn't even know that I was being taught. And so then I would have 3 or 5 pages all spaced out there, a whole bunch of words talking about this and that and other. And, you know, in something connected with the job that we're assigned to do, with supply matters. And he would say, okay, now, I looked at your 5 pages here, and I went over all your words and whatnot, and you're just using too many words. And he said, words are supposed to do a job. Say, all we want is a job done. I don't have time to read novels for. He said, I don't have this leisure time. Say, I'm up against the clock here every day. So then he demonstrated to me. 2 paragraphs took up about a half a page, if that, much less than a half a page in type. And it said everything that I had to say in 5 pages of small print, all, you know, real close together, the lines real close together, jammed up aside, you know, in a stack on each page. And each page was totally full, and that's why he said, I said, you know, Fuller, you said large quantities of nothing and said it very well. And I remember that statement.
Mm-hmm.
So he was saying, you know, just say what you got to say and do it in as few words as possible, just enough to get the job done, Fuller. That's all. Not try to be glamorous or whatnot. I mean, you know, this is no, you know, hey, we're running a business here. Be business-like.
Mm-hmm.
And so in answer to the question, yeah, words are basically tools, and he taught me that. You just, you know, like a pair of pliers. You just want to do the job. I mean, not like you, what they might call a crooked plumber. You're trying to stretch the job out so that you can run up the bill. No, just get it done efficiently.
Get it done.
Use the words that are necessary, and that's that. But see, I came up in the old school in the Baptist church and whatnot, where the preacher said, now I'm going to be preaching all day. Okay. Now, what can I think of to preach to keep these people here? And by the way, while you know, truth be told, while we're keeping them here, we keep passing that plate about 5 times.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Fuller, and thank you, Nancy L, for your question. Your other two, I will try to work in at some other point. You're listening to the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. I am your co-host, Mr. Bobby. And for those who get an opportunity to, it's passed, but you can also elect to say, and I'll say it to Mr. Fuller for you, happy birthday, which was his birthday, which was acknowledged 6 days ago. But a lot of people got on my page and wanted me to say that to him. So he did, I did, and we'll do this again in the second hour. Gary Jones, gotcha. Oh, by the way, thank you, Moon Pie. Also, Leon G., who got us together. You're doing good, brother. You make Mr. Fuller and I sound real, real good. So I just want to thank you and all the technical staff that make this program sound real good. Both Mr. Fuller and I are working to be better, trust me. Okay, Gary Jones said this to you, Mr. Fuller, Mr. Fuller, are the United States' ongoing conflicts in Asia part of maximum sophisticated white supremacy confusion?
Well, everything that a white supremacist does, according to the evidence, the counter-racist code, everything in any area of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war is done to make the system of white supremacy stronger, regardless of how they start out or what it looks like on the surface. Keep that in mind. If that person is a white supremacist, not talking about all white people, but the white people who have chosen the doctrine, the culture, the government, world government, called the system of white supremacy as their mission. They don't do anything knowingly that's not going to make the system of white supremacy stronger in all of these areas of activity, conglomerate, or in each one on a daily basis, in every move that they make, everything that they say and do, regardless of how it looks on the surface. If that person is a racist, and most racists will say, one of the first things they'll say, the real refined ones, oh, I'm not a racist. You know, I just believe in individual liberties. I believe in democracy. I believe in republicanism. I believe in this, that, and other, anything they can get you to believe. Because the greatest weapon of a racist is deception and pretending that they are not racist when they are, when they're running the whole thing. I mean, they're puppeteering all over the place, 24/7. The most skilled ones. There are some that kind of inept, but the skilled ones keep them in line by banging their heads together if necessary and say, you got to get back on your job. You're not going to, you know, you're part of a conglomerate here. You're part of the greatest, most powerful government that the world has ever seen. The smartest government, made up of the smartest people, and that is the system of white supremacy. So in answer to the question, yes, if the white supremacists are operating among any non-white people, it is for the purpose of making the system of white supremacy stronger.
Stronger. With that, we will break here. Thank you, Mr. Fuller, for answering and addressing that particular question. You are listening to the Counter-Racist Code Show with Mr. Neil E. Fuller, Jr. I am your co-host, Mr. Bobby. And if you would like to be a participant in the show, you can do that by calling this number, 516-453-9921. And if you would like to ask a question, just simply press the number one button and you will get in line. And when it is your time, I will ask you your question. I would ask, please, ma'am, please, sir, be brief so that Mr. Fuller can address your question. You can also Gmail me at the numeral 7, Mr. Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, at gmail.com. And I will, at some point, read your comment. It may not be today, but I will, if I get a chance to, when I get a chance to, I'll read it. Also, the chat room is available and is open, and there are quite a few people in the chat room here. You can get in that and get into the chats that are going on, and occasionally I will read one of those chats to see what's going on and what's happening there. Okay, all that and more coming up here on the Counter-Racist Code Show with Mr. Neil E. Fuller, Jr. Thank you for listening. Mr. Fuller, last week you mentioned, speaking about the ninth area, you mentioned about the ninth area of people activity. You mentioned about the cell and put that person in there that does this killing. Put them in there with, I think you said a 9 millimeter or whatever, a bullet, so that they could off themselves. A lot of people found that a little disturbing. Could you explain that again, why you feel that that is necessary to do?
I think it should be universal, and everybody should understand that in front. You kill somebody willfully, deliberately. I'm talking about murder one. I'm talking about a person who, you know, and many of us who do it, that everybody in the world should understand. It might not catch you, but if you get caught, and, you know, you might have a lengthy trial. The people that catch you and accuse you of doing that, so you've got a lot of people who are falsely accused. But I'm talking about a thorough investigation, and then investigate it all over again if you have to. Because you're talking about dealing with a person. You know, I wouldn't want to be accused of doing something I didn't do. But if I willfully and deliberately kill anybody on this planet, if Neely Fuller does it, and I know I did it, I mean, I really did it. You know, nobody reported it or anything like that. But somebody found out that I did it, and I got caught. What should happen to me? I'm talking about today. Once I am convicted, I might go through the whole thing of the appeal and all like that. Of course, naturally, I'm trying to get out of this mess that I got myself into. All right? But I'm talking about murder. That's what I'm talking about. That's why I call it maximum emergency compensatory confinement. It's an emergency where you have a certain point where you have so much killing going on, like all this stuff going on in Chicago and Senegal and you know, assassinations in Haiti, whatever it is. The person that did it, you took somebody out of this world unjustly. I'm not talking about self-defense. I'm talking about you willfully and deliberately and unjustly. You had no business doing it. Robbery and all that. But you killed a person. That's not nothing to play with. We play with that. We think because we got all these toys called guns that are deadly, this is serious business. We don't look at it like that because we're so used to people dying all the time and everybody, you know, all black females hugging each other in front of the funeral home and got balloons and teddy bears. That stupid stuff should stop immediately. There shouldn't be anything like that. And anybody who does it, according to the code, and it's in the code book, it's described in detail, the recommendation. Anywhere in the world, white or non-white, doesn't matter. You do something like that. You take somebody out of here and think you're still supposed to be here, that's not even logical. You're not supposed to be here for 2 seconds after you do something like that. You want to keep breathing, and the person that you took out of here is not breathing. Who could object to that? No, you go and apologize to that person that you murdered. Apologizing to the family in court and tell them, talking about, well, I'm sorry and all like that. I want to apologize to the boy's mother and his grandmother sitting there in the wheelchair and whatnot. I made it hard for them. I understand that. And I want y'all to have some mercy on me. No, you think about what you do before you do it. You do it. I don't care who you are. An officer in the army, I mean, you know, that the what you call war crimes and all that, whatever that is. I mean, yeah, murder. I mean, and you know, in the army, I mean, you know, you're licensed to kill, whatnot. But whatever, you know, you kill somebody according to the law, not supposed to be killed. You say, hey, yes, I did it. Why? Because you did it. See, that running and hiding and whatnot, no. Don't run and hide. Take credit for your work. Stand by your work. That's in the code book, too. But to go back into the details, maximum emergency compensatory confinement, if they have the facilities, a lot of places are kind of primitive. They don't have the facilities. But to the best of one's ability. If you are a person that puts a person into maximum emergency, compensatory confinement, you put that person in and you try to make those conditions as soundproof as you possibly can. If you're in what you call a modern setting, in a city or in a place or in a so-called country where you have these facilities, I mean, yeah, it'll be a concrete facility, and there's all this roaming around in the prison yard and all like that and coming up with schemes to shank somebody. After you murder somebody on the outside, you murder somebody on the inside. I mean, that's just fun and games. That nonsense should be unheard of. And so what should happen? You should be put into this maximum emergency compensatory confinement, which means, and that arguing with the guards and throwing urine on them and all like that, oh, no, none of that. Why? Because that guard, the last guard whose face you see, that's the last face you will ever see. You won't even see your own face. You can remember that guard's face, because that's the last face you're ever going to see in this world. Once you are locked up, I mean, that door slams, a steel door,
mm-hmm.
in a concrete cage, and you're in there with your friend. What is your friend? That weapon that you use. Now, if you use a knife, well, it's kind of hard to kill yourself with a knife, all right? I mean, you might have a little difficulty there. So, you know, you don't want to be cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment in the Northwestern Hemisphere. That's cruel and unusual. That's not being, you don't want to be cruel. So it's best to have a firearm. A firearm will do it swiftly. You know, it might be a .357 Magnum, but it'll have one bullet in it. You're going to get one chance at this. And it's democratic. Democratic, meaning you have the option. You can use it anytime you want to. You'll get one meal a day through a trapdoor, because you're not using a lot of energy in there. You're not working out with lifting weights and all that kind of stuff. No, that's gone. There's nothing in there but you and your friend. And a toilet. That's it. You're lying on a comfortable floor, maybe with some type of padding on it. It's not a torture chamber, except it's just given the semblance of the person that you kill. You want to be as close to that as you possibly can. The person that you kill doesn't hear anything. The person that you kill doesn't talk to anybody. The person that you kill doesn't see anything, doesn't hear anything. There's no TV in there, no music. If you want to talk to someone, talk to yourself. You know so much, you're so smart, you know everything. When you take somebody out of this world, you're telling them. You got a license to do that because you're a smart dude. You know everything. Okay. So talk to yourself, Mr. Know-Everything. I mean, repeat to yourself. You can recite poetry or anything you want to do in there. That trap door opens and you are fed once a day, an excellent meal. An excellent meal, not no slop. And the guard knows that you're still in there and you haven't killed yourself. By what? By the tray coming back. See, if the tray doesn't come back, then the guard doesn't bring no more food. That's the way that works. If that tray doesn't come back through that slot after you're finished, then the guard will know that either you're asleep or you missed the day or something like that, but it's only when the tray comes back you get your next meal. But after so many days or weeks pass and the tray doesn't come back, they'll just wait because you got a gun in there. See, the guard can't take no chances. So the guard will wait 6 months. You might be dead in there for 6 months because you killed yourself 6 months ago. That's the way that will work. See, I worked out the details. And everybody, you will be taught this, say, by the time you get to the fourth or fifth grade, you will know. They will show film in school and all like that about exactly what happens to you if you murder somebody anywhere in the world. Anywhere in the world. And you'll have appeal, of course. You might even have two appeals before you get in greater maximum emergency compensatory confinement. Because, see, we have made fun out of killing people because the white supremacists have made fun out of killing people. That's why we have this, what, coming up, Halloween, all about glorifying death.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the movies that you see, they got a movie coming out now called, what, 007 Again.
Yes.
All about guns, worshiping guns, worshiping guns. You know, I used to worship guns. I used to buy Stoger's Shooter's Bible. That's what it's called, a Bible. Stoger's, if I remember the title of the book, the catalog correctly, Shooter's Bible, a big, thick catalog.
Mm-hmm.
I used to order those catalogs, I mean, by the half dozen, and look through them page by page at the Winchesters and the Mossbergs and the Walters.
Yes.
And the Lugers and the Colts and the Smith and Wessons, page after page, shotguns, rifles, you know, all, most of them designed to do what? Kill people. And that's, we've been fed a steady diet of that.
Yes. I remember when you pointed this out, when you taught us about the Academy Award, and I had been watching a little bit of that for years. But when you taught us that, and I never thought about this, that statuette or whatever, that Oscar or whatever that is, when you pointed out that there was a sword by that statue glorifying killing, I had never thought about that.
Oscar doesn't even have clothes on. The Oscar that they award every year for movies. Look at that Oscar. People have hold it up, oh, and tears in their eyes. I won an Oscar. But look at Oscar. Oscar doesn't have on any clothes, but he's got something that's a symbol of death, a sword covering up his phallus. If it's a male, if Oscar is a male, you know, and not covering up a vagina, if it's a female. But Oscar has a sword. No clothes, no nothing. But Oscar, because if somebody was an excellent actor or actress in a movie and you award something called an Oscar, and that Oscar has one item in its hand, and that's a sword.
That's a sword, yes.
Swords are not made to, you know, like screwdrivers and saws. I mean, you know, not even an axe that can be used to kill a person. A lot of axes are used for that. They got a thing called battle axes in old days. But an axe can be used to chop wood. Swords are not used to chop wood. Swords are used for one purpose, to take a person out of this world into another one. That's what they're known for.
That's what they're known for, yes. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. You're listening to the Counter-Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr. And if you have a question, just simply dial this number, which is 516-453-9921. And when you do that, please, ma'am, please, sir, give the call screener your name so that I can look at that and give you your proper introduction. Before we go to Mr. Fuller speaking about his book, we have, from the Gmail, we have Ms. Divitude says this: Mr. Fuller, one more question for you. Why do white supremacists live so long?
Oh, because, you know, they studied the science and technology to help them live long, let alone of how they can terminate people. They are very contradictory people. They worship death, and at the same time they say they worship life. And that's because, in my opinion, and this is just an opinion, they have a God complex. See, they say the Lord giveth in the Christian religion, and the Lord taketh away. And the white supremacists have a history going all the way back, and some symptoms of it were showing up in the Roman Empire, because emperors like to think of themselves as, well, I'm emperor. That's about as far as you can go, is to be emperor. But there's one step further. You can be a god. And in the TV series, British Broadcasting Company, I, Claudius, that is on my movie list, but basically it's a TV series. I think it's got about 13 parts and that I recommend. It's on the movie list that is in the Go to Produce Justice, and you'll see that list. And I, Claudius, is on that. And Caesar Augustus and Lady Livia, I think, is a lady, a character in that series called Empress Livia. She was the grandmother of a lot of the other emperors or something like that, people who became emperor. And she was always begging, I think she begged Claudius, one of the emperors, to make her a god, goddess, you know. Please, Claudius, don't let me die without you making me a god, you know. And, you know, they wanted to be gods. Now, what do gods do? Gods give it, and they take us away. The white supremacists definitely have a god complex. You black people, I can give you welfare, I can take it away. I can let you live, but I'll take your life away from you. I'll pull the plug on you in a minute. You'll be gone. There ain't nothing nobody can do about it. There ain't nobody big enough and bad enough to take me on. I mean, I am the next thing to God. I'm the closest thing to God all you black people will ever see, because all of you are going to hell. You know.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. It's at this time, Mr. Fuller, for the next few moments here, before we wind down this hour, that we need for you to discuss your book. So take it away, Mr. Fuller.
Yes. The textbook and all the things I've been saying here are kind of paraphrased in one way or another on this program and on all the other programs, are in the textbook for victims of white supremacy, a compensatory counter-racist code that's supposed to tell the individual black person who is frustrated and going through problems in any area of activity, economics, you got an economic problem, you know, you're going to get set out of you where the premises that you are because COVID-19 has kept you away from your job and all like that. And, you know, you've been told that you can't be evicted, but it's going to come a time when you're going to be evicted, and prepare for that because all your stuff's going to be out in the street, so don't accumulate a lot of stuff. Start putting that stuff somewhere. I mean, piece by piece, give it to somebody or some relative and whatnot, fan it out all over the place so that you don't have to pay all that expense when you move, because you're going to be moving. And I don't want to digress too much because I'm supposed to be focused on the book. But
yes, sir.
This is what the book is for. It's supposed to make you think about tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day and how to do what? Solve problems, but how to solve them how? In the most constructive manner. As a victim of racism in a world of injustice, because under the government of the system of white supremacy, that means a government, a world government, that glorifies non-justice, glorifies doing harm to people and laughing about it. That's what the system of white supremacy is all about. So what the book does, if you're a victim of white supremacy, and if you're not a victim, it doesn't apply to you. I always say I'm a victim of white supremacy because that's the truth. I'm that more than I am anything that I've ever been. So, and it's an evil system. So it tells you how to react to that system as an individual person. That's what the book is about. In all nine areas of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. You're supposed to find something. It doesn't go into fine detail, but it goes into enough detail to give you some type of guidance about how to maneuver in this type of evil world, which the whole world is engulfed by the system of racism. So
yes,
it's
sir.
Evil.
Yes, sir.
So you can get it by going to producejustice.com.
Yes, sir. All right. Producejustice.com. Speaking about that, producejustice.com, very quickly, usually on Thursdays, station WOL out of Washington, in particular the Carl Nelson Show, you are usually on that. Do you have any information for this month as to that situation?
No, I don't. That'll
okay.
be WOL 1450 on your dial AM.
Yes, sir.
I think it's 95.9 on FM.
Yes, sir.
But it's the Carl Nelson Show, and I'm a guest on it for 2 hours, usually about once a month. And this is October now, and but I haven't been notified that I might be on
okay.
this month. But usually I am. For the last
yes.
few years, that's been the case.
Okay. Well, yeah, and this and I think Robert, one of the attorneys, told me that it's also posted on the producejustice.com website when that is. So, okay, very, very good. Okay, question here as we wrap up this hour from Divitude, excuse me, from Miss Anonymous. She says this concerning the topic was showing off. She said, Mr. Fuller, what are some of the great tips to help black people to stop showing off all the time when around others?
Just stop it. You know, just be quiet and stop being the center of attention. See, black people are starved for attention. Like prisoners of war, I mean, you know, you got a number. And black people, instinctively, and that's a natural trait, you just don't want to be just a face in the crowd that doesn't stand out. I am like Reverend Jesse Jackson used to say years ago, I am somebody, all right? I mean, I don't know exactly what kind of somebody I am, but I am somebody, and I want somebody's attention. My daddy didn't pay me no attention and ran off, left my mama, you know, with all my sisters and brothers, you know, and we just, you know, I get on the bus, ain't nobody noticing me. Well, I'm gonna get me a hairdo or some tattoos. I want somebody to pay me some attention. I gotta have some attention. My mama's so busy, she don't give me enough attention. So black people, worldwide, and particularly in the Northwestern Hemisphere, I mean everybody's aware of that. We want attention. We want somebody to pay us some kind of attention, even if I have to just walk up and hit you in the head with a hammer. I mean, in a crowd of people, for no reason at all except what? I want somebody to pay attention to me. I'm tired of all you people just walking past me like I ain't there. You can see it in the faces of black people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm standing here in the middle of the sidewalk. You know, all these white people walking past me talking business and whatnot. You know, talking about Wall Street and all this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, I'm here. You know, my name is Willie Jackson. You know, don't somebody know who I am? You know, I'll tell you one thing. If I start shooting, they're going to know who I am. That's where that comes from. See,
yes,
that great need, an answer to the question, and we should stifle that urge. If you want people to pay you some attention, learn how to do something that people need. There's an old saying, you do something that people want or need, they'll be the path to your door. I mean, when you need a plumber, you're going to find out your plumber's name when water's all over your basement.
Yes.
All right, at midnight, on a cold night, zero weather outside. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Steve Anderson. That's that guy's name. Where's his number? Yeah, you see, okay? They get you out of bed. Why?
Yes, they will.
Because they want somebody to stop that water from filling up that basement in that brand-new house you just got. And so here comes Steve. So you would tell everybody that you know. Hey, do you know Steve? He's the best plumber you can get. He'll come in anytime. He'll come at midnight and whatnot. He'll come on holidays. You know, Steve is all about business.
Yes,
see,
that's
be
what
about
we...
business. Be about business, and you will attract people.
That's what we do.
But just walking around with your shirt tail hanging out, they ain't going to attract nobody.
No, no. Or
except,
your pants hanging.
Except some trouble that you don't want. Right.
Paul from England says this. Now, I don't remember this, but you may have done it. It says, Mr. Bobby, can you please ask Mr. Fuller Jr., Neely Fuller Jr., to sing again? That was great on today's show. I guess it was last week, the 5th of October. Great show. Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. is a legend. Steely, UK style. Did you sing last week? Did you sing last week?
What?
Sing. He wanted you to sing.
Oh, I ain't no singer. I wanted to be. I wanted to be Nat Cole. I wanted to be Billy Eckstein. I wanted to be Arthur Prysock. I wanted to be Tony Bennett. But this is all back when I was about 10, 15 years old.
Yes.
I mean, I wanted to be every singer that did what? That people would pay attention to, you know? I mean, the ladies would all crowd around if you're a singer. So, hey, maybe I need to learn how to sing a song, you know. I might get a little crowd going. And a lot of us think that, and some of us make a success out of it. Hey, I can see that, hey, I ain't going to never be Arthur Prysock.
And a lot of people don't even know who he is, but I remember Arthur Prysock.
Oh, yes, and I admire his records right to this day. I'm really old school. I like to hear songs that, you know that, of course, that's just me. I'm not criticizing anybody's choice.
Of course
the code
not,
doesn't allow that, right.
Mm-hmm.
Music is whatever you hear, and I just want to interject this. There's two types of sound in the universe, music and noise. And what's the difference between music and noise? Music is whatever you hear that inspires you to think constructively. Noise is whatever you hear that makes you think non-constructively. That's it. Something to think about.
Something to think about. Did you like Coco Taylor or Dinah Washington?
Some songs.
Yeah.
See, I didn't particularly like the artists as much as I liked the songs that were being sung.
Okay.
At one point, someone asked me, Fuller, you wrote the code. You're sitting up here listening to Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra is white. I said, hey. And recently, someone, about a few years ago, someone sent me a Frank Sinatra CD with Antonio Jobin, I think his name is. Jobin.
I don't know.
J-O-B-I-N.
Okay.
Yeah, Jay Boone. Yeah, anyhow, when I first put it on, I didn't pay much attention to it. But after a while, I learned that any time I put that on, I think better and clearer.
Wow.
As background.
Yes.
And things come to my mind that hasn't come to my mind before. It's just weird.
Okay.
Now,
yeah.
A person might say, yeah, but that's all Frank Sinatra, man. That's not only real old school. Ain't even white folks listening to him now. I mean, you know, and you black, and you ain't listening to James Brown. I mean, when you doing your writing, and you ain't inspired by I'm Black and I'm Proud. I say no, not when I'm writing. I can put that Jobin on, and
Joe
really
Bean.
And turn it down.
Yes.
And it works every time.
Okay, got to close it out, though.
To do a whole bunch of things that help to make this program. It's weird, but it works.
Yes. Got to close that first hour out. Thank you for all that for listening. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. You've been listening to the Counter Resistance Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr. I'm the co-host, Mr. Bobby. Stay tuned for another hour of this fantastic show. If you got to go, we hope that we see you next week. We'll try to do better. You've been listening to the Counter Resistance Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr. Stay tuned. All righty. Welcome back to the second hour of the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr., heard here on Blog Talk Radio, also reproduced on producejustice.com. We have Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr., who will be discussing his books. We will field your phone calls and your Gmails and maybe read some chats. To get in contact with the show, just simply call 516- 453-9921. And if you have a question, press the number one button and your name will come up. I'll give your name to the call screener so that I can attempt to address your name. I can't say that I'll get it right because, as you well know, I have so much trouble in saying names, but anyway, do that so I can do that. You can also Gmail me at the numeral number 7, Mr. Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, at gmail.com. And occasionally you can get in the chat room, and I will give you, read some of the chats that are in there. Al Freedom is there. J.J. Keller from England is there. Emery Lumumba, the Invisible Negro, is in the house. Jacoby Toucan is there. Produce 21 is there. The Man, 1906, is there. New guy, or new person. And Unknown Knowns is also in the house. Welcome to the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr. Okay, let's see here. Now, this person in the 502 has tapped the question button, but it said no question on it. Maybe you're just listening. I'm going to try and get you in here. Let me see. Okay, got you in. Okay, now I didn't have a name up here, but I have you live on the air with Mr. Fuller. Did you have a question? No, you did not have a question. Okay, thank you. I'll just do this for you. From the 562, you didn't give a name, but I'm gonna put you in here. Did you have a question for Mr. Fuller?
Oh, good morning. That was quick.
Yeah, that was quick. Marcus. Okay, Marcus. Yeah, now your name is.
Yeah.
How you doing, Marcus? I'm sorry. Yeah, your name wasn't up there. Good morning, sir. How
I'm
you
still
feeling?
Learning.
Okay.
I'm good. I'm still learning. Thank you.
All right.
Let's get to it. Mr. Fuller, did you hear about the high school shooting in Arlington, Texas last week? And if so, what are your thoughts on that?
Did I hear about what?
The shooting at Arlington, at a high school in Arlington. It was supposedly an 18-year-old black kid who did the shooting. But in my head the whole time, I was thinking, I don't know where young black kids learn to shoot up high schools without taking account that white kids have been doing this for the longest as well, in regards to high schools.
You say there was a shooting? And
the
it was
story,
a black?
Yes.
And
so
it was,
what happened
the shooter was black?
Correct.
And what about it?
I was just asking if you had heard about that incident and your thoughts on it.
I've heard about several shootings, I mean, that involved black people at high schools, I think, in reading about it. There's so many of them that happened, and so I'm not familiar with any specific one because there's so many. But and the question is what? Why do black people do this or what?
Well, my question was just pretty much what were your thoughts on it, but the reason why I asked is because from what I have observed, I've seen only the majority of white children going to high schools and shooting up a high school. This is the first time that I have seen that it was a black kid who did it.
Well, sure. Well, black, you know, black people, the under the system of white supremacy, under this prison system, we act out according to what we see. Just like people anywhere in the world, if you see everybody fishing, you're in a village where everybody goes fishing, and you're 6, 7, 8 years old. You walk down and watch the boats, and you watch the people with the fishing nets. And by the time you're 16 or maybe 15 or 14, you're out there with fishing lines and fishing nets just like all the other people, because that's what you see everybody doing. Everybody around here fishes. They get up in the morning and they go down to the water. The water's nearby, and you're in a village where that's what people do. Everybody's, you know, fish. And a few people are doing some, might be doing some farming or picking fruit off of trees and whatnot. So the next thing you know, by the time you're 20 years old, that's what you've been picking fruit off trees, and you've been going fishing and casting fishing nets in the canoe. And you're good at it because you keep doing anything. So it's no different with black people being in the white world run by the white supremacists. So whatever you is glamorized, whatever, you know, Halloween or whatever, hey, a trick or treat. I'm going to do that too. That's what everybody else is doing. Another holiday coming up, so-called Columbus Day. I mean, whatever you do, well, you go out and buy a bunch of stuff. Well, I'm going out and buy a bunch of stuff. So you take your cues from what is supposed to be what? Popular. And how do you find out that? Just by observing what's going on around you. Me too. That's a common saying right now. It's been made into a sort of a copyright cliche. Me too. You know, I see somebody else doing it. I'm going to do some of that too. You know, snort cocaine or whatever, I'm going to do some of that too if everybody in the village is doing it. So I'm going to do that too. I knew the first time I thought about smoking a cigarette was why? Everybody smokes cigarettes. All the movie stars smoke cigarettes. But I tried it one time. I think I was 13. And I said, this is nothing but smoke. And I never tried it again. Because it didn't make sense to me then, and it doesn't now. Inhaling smoke? Are you kidding? I mean, and you pay to do it? And all I'm doing is coughing. How come the rest of these people ain't coughing? Well, they got used to it. And it had something in it. Whatever it is that made people want to keep doing it once they started it. And that's when I really started becoming really aware of the weird world that I was in. Just a thing like what you might call smoking tobacco. If you're real sophisticated, you would have a pipe with some tobacco in it. And then when I started reading about things, tobacco had a lot to do with people enslaving people. A lot of slaves are very familiar with tobacco because they were made slaves because of the tobacco trade. Tobacco ain't worth nothing. It kills people. Little by little, you don't see people smoking in movies. A lot of people don't notice that. Look at all the old movies, like my favorite movie, Casablanca, Humphrey Bogart, chain smoker. Everybody smokes. It's sophisticated to have a cigarette between your fingers. In answer to the question, yes, this is how all of this comes about. Me too. Whatever you see somebody else do, do it. The code says never, ever do anything because you see somebody else do it. I'm going to put that as a punchline that comes right out of the code book, the counter-racist code. No. Every person, every black person on this planet, that message is in the code book. Don't ever, 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 ever do anything just because you saw somebody else do it or heard about somebody else doing it. Always look at what's done or what people are doing and then have one thing in your mind. Is it producing a constructive result? Yes or no?
Constructive result.
That's what
you're
looking
for. Thank you, Marcus. I don't have to tell you don't be a stranger because you're my man. You call in. Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Fuller. David wrote this. Said, Mr. Fuller, is white supremacy considered a sin? If so, why is there so many different religions and different gods? A small g, by the way.
Well, sin is something associated with religion. And what you have in the code book, the word guide, I put in there, sin, in one word, is hypocrisy. In other words, telling yourself things that are not true and telling everybody else things. Saying one thing and doing another. The white supremacists are experts at that. So they are the greatest sinners on the planet, according to the counter-racist code. And you say it like that, giving it that definition. That's a compensatory definition. Now, if you look in different dictionaries and encyclopedias, you might find all kinds of definitions for sin. But I looked at what is a real hardcore sin? It's being a hypocrite. Pretend to be something that you're not. Putting on that false face. See, that's deception. I'm saying the greatest, the only real definition for it, broad definition, is hypocrisy. The white supremacists are the greatest hypocrites in recorded history. Pretending to be persons that believe in love and all of these nice things, sugar and spice and everything nice, you might say. No. They believe in causing misery deliberately, even when it's completely unnecessary. Completely unnecessary. But they get thrills out of it. And fooling people, pretending to be something that they are not, is something that they're experts in, and they teach everybody else to be that way, to be hypocrites, pretending to be something that they're not. It's the worst possible thing that a person can do, in my opinion, and I put it in the code book. The definition of sin, hypocrisy, being a hypocrite, pretending to be something that you're not, not showing your true self as you really are.
Yes, Sinner Man by Nina Simone. Thank you, Unknown Unknowns. Thank you. All right, Mr. Fuller. Chris Miller has this to say from the Gmails. I said this, Mr. Bobby, could you kindly pass along a birthday wish to our master teacher as I pose a VGQ and question? I hope this message finds you both well, sirs. VGQ, Mr. Fuller, the area of entertainment has never been more clear to me until recent days. I have a clear to me, in recent days, I have a loved one who is slightly critical of your work, but can sit and listen to anything you say that is done via the hip-hop cartoons YouTube page. If you are unfamiliar with that, Mr. Fuller, I beg you to seek it out. Now, my question, Mr. Fuller, the code presents unconventional thinking that many do not understand. Has code-based and logical thinking presented any problems in your life with family members, loved ones, and close associations? And if so, how did you manage the tension caused by such thinking? Thank you, Chris Miller, Jacksonville, Florida, via Brooklyn, New York.
Excellent question. It doesn't happen. See, I don't talk about the code unless somebody else wants to. That's it. That's in the code book itself. You don't even talk about the race issue. No black person should talk about the race issue to any other black person or to a white person, period. Unless the person wants to talk about it. That's when you talk. But you do talk about something else. The thing that you are ultimately after. And what is that something else? Or you should be. That everybody on the planet should want. Justice. And if you talk about justice, it's going to lead to a discussion about racism sooner or later. The code says that. That's a given. Why? Racism is real. It dominates what people do all over the planet 24/7. It's the greatest, most powerful government of people in recorded history, according to the Compensatory Counter-Racist Code. A lot of people may disagree with that, but I'm saying that's true. So if you talk of, and racism is opposed to justice, okay? So if you're talking about promoting justice, meaning guaranteeing that no person is mistreated, white or non-white, male, female, whomever, old, young, you can't mistreat nobody if you're talking about justice, producing a product that's never been produced. Justice, guaranteeing that no one is mistreated. And the second guarantee, in order to have justice, you have to guarantee that the person who needs help the most gets the most constructive help in whatever area they need the help in. Economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, or war. You give each person the most constructive help in any one or more of those areas of activity, including yourself, in order to have what? A thing called justice. So if a person doesn't want to talk about race, and I follow it, and that's why I don't have any problems. Plus, I invented something called VGQ that rules out any kind of conflict that you have with anybody, including white people, in a discussion about racism. Because you talk about justice, and just about everybody says they believe in justice. They believe in nobody being mistreated. Just about everybody will say that. Oh, no, I don't believe in mistreating. I don't believe in messing with people, man. That ain't my thing, messing with people, man. I don't do none of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a guy that messes with people all the time. When he's talking, yeah. But he'll say he don't do that, all right? Nobody wants that kind of badge. Yeah, I go around mistreating people. That's my thing. I love mistreating people. I enjoy that. How many people are going to say that? All right? No, yeah. Nobody, okay?
Nobody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what you do. You talk about, that's why I don't have any conflict, and the BGQ, like some of the callers today have said, well, Fuller, you ought to hear some of the things that people say about you and your stuff and all like that. And they ask me what I think about it. And people ask me that sometimes when they're talking to me. Say, oh, yeah, I've heard people talking about, man, I've heard people say that there's some pretty good stuff there. And I've heard people say that you're the biggest fool they ever seen or ever heard, you know. And who is this guy, Neely Fuller? And I say, hey, they're supposed to say that. All right. And then I go to page 171, 172.
Yes, sir.
All right. Anytime now, anybody who is listening right now and answer to the question directly, what do you do if you're having this problem? Because I don't have it. 171 and 172 will take care of it in the basic textbook, 2016 version, under economics. 171, 172. And you ask yourself, first of all, these four questions. What do I want to do? Why do I want to do it? How do I plan to do it? And what do I expect the constructive result to be? Now, you can also paraphrase by asking that question of others. What do you want me to do? See, when you're criticized for what you're saying and all like that, you just back up and drop everything and say, okay, here's what. Cancel everything that I've been saying. Just forget about it. We'll start from scratch, since it looks like we're heading for an argument, because the code book says you're never supposed to have an argument with anybody. You have a conversation. What's the difference between a conversation and an argument? A conversation is designed to solve problems. An argument is designed to win arguments. That's two different things.
Yes, sir.
So how do you solve problems? By asking questions. And what are the questions that you ask? What do you want me to do? Why do you want me to do it? How do you plan for me to do it? And what do you expect the constructive result to be? Now, I was discussing that with somebody just last night, and I said, hey, anytime you put those four questions out there, I don't care where you are in the world, if people can speak your language and you can get that across, those four questions, it'll take everybody right where they ought to be. It will not take everybody where they want to be, but it'll take everybody. The answers will take everybody right where they ought to be. If you don't believe it, try it.
Oh, that's right, Mr. Fuller. Okay. Listen, I have a question here, which is going to lead right into another question. This is from Tay-Tay. Tay-Tay, got you, man. From the Big D from Dallas. He says this, good morning. My name is Tay from Dallas, Texas. Can you please ask Mr. Fuller, how can someone best learn from his book, The United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept Textbook? I am reading the book now. I am new to learning about white supremacy racism. How can I study this book to best understand it from Mr. Fuller's eyes? What are other ways to learn about white supremacy racism?
Just keep reading the book and then take your eyes off the book and look around you and ask questions. All problems and all solutions to problems has to do with what? Questions and answers all over the universe. So you look at the book, understand what you're looking at as best you can. Neely Fuller is a long ways from being the best writer in the world. In fact, I'm a very sloppy writer. I mean, most people who are what you call top-of-the-line writers, they would look at Neely Fuller. The way he expresses things, the way he says things, man, he's just all over the place. And, you know, he ain't organized and always talking about you should be, you know, have a code. A code is organized. This is supposed to be a code. His book ain't even organized. But I tried to do the best I could, okay? But in answer to the question, just pick up the book, first of all, and just thumb through it. And just see something that makes sense to you. If it doesn't make sense to you on this page, turn to another page. Little by little, things may come to you. So, you know, that's just a learning process. And then every now and then, you see something in the book, and then look around you and see if what you see in the book is true in what you're looking at every day, on the job or wherever. You say, now, I read this book by Neely Fuller, and he said that when you're around white people, this and this and this would happen and all like that. When I go on my job tomorrow, I'm going to see if he knows what in the heck he's talking about, all right? Because he say white folks do this and they do that and all like that, and black folks do this and do that, you know. I never paid attention to it, but tomorrow when I go in on the job, I'm going to pay attention to it. I'm going to study the people around me and see if they actually do these things or act this way. Or, you know, and look at the big picture. See things in a way that I never paid no attention to before. In answer to the question, that's the process. Because that's how I started writing the book. Paying attention to, in detail, paying attention to what people say, how they say it, what people laugh at, what people get mad about. See, you start with that and see if it corresponds with something that you might see in the book. That's it. That's how you do it. That's how you use the book. That's how I use the book. And I wrote it. I have to consult the book and say, did I get that right? And so far, when I double check, I say, yep. What I saw the other day fits right into what I got on page 32 or whatever it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Tay-Tay. Mr. Fuller, before we go to – well, I'll tell you what. Let's go to break first, then I'll ask this question here. You are listening to the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr. And we thank you for your listenership here on Blog Talk Radio. The show will also be reproduced at producejustice.com. You can hear the show in its entirety if you miss the first hour. So you want to tune in for that. Mr. Fuller will speak about his books. He will also answer your questions or your VGQs and other questions that you may have. And we thank you for your listenership. So you want to go to producejustice.com for all that information and the latest that is going on in this world. We thank you again for your listenership and for being a part of our Blog Talk family here, in particular, the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Fuller, as we wind this down here, we got about 30 minutes. This has been in the news, particularly of late. The former coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, Mr. John Gruden, has turned in his resignation, being that he allegedly has made some very bad comments about Mr. DeMaurus Smith, the president of the NFL Players Association. They have him on emails that he has written. Sexist, homosexual comments that he has made against homosexuals in the NFL and all over, misogyny and other things. They have him on records, on emails that he has written. That he has written, and he resigned, I believe it was yesterday. It was announced, and he's indicated that he wasn't a racist, but when the NFL and others looked over the records that, or the evidence that, of tweets and information that he has said and comments that he made in particular about Mr. DeMaurus Smith's lips, everybody that made comment mentioned that they were racist in nature, and he did resign from his position as the head football coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. under compensatory logic, Mr. Fuller, what say you, or how should we look at what he said and what was done, particularly as a result of the evidence that he laid out according to his treats, which were very harmful to a lot of people?
Well, the approach of the code is questions and answers. See, I in fact, I don't believe in firing people because of something that they said.
He resigned. Because, they didn't fire. He resigned.
Oh, well, I mean, if forced to resign, it means he's got to get a job somewhere else. Now, he's going to get a job, and he's probably going to be angry about it. He will get a job. He's white. So he'll get a job somewhere else doing something. And what it is, he takes that anger with him. Now it's been multiplied. So what you want to do is stifle it by doing what? Problem solve. So you just simply ask him questions. See, all problems are solved in the universe by questions and answers. So if he says something against gays or against black people, if he says something to me, you know, directly, I mean, on a loudspeaker, I mean, to everybody in the stadium, at a Raiders football game, I mean, at the Super Bowl. I mean, it said it on the speakers for the whole world to hear. See, and when it came right down to it, I was just going to the question and answer thing. I say, now, you have something against me because I'm black? And you say, yeah, and he will say whatever he said that, you know, I don't know what he said, his exact words, but I would just go over all the words that he said and ask questions about the words.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it takes to resolve any of this, rather than everybody just get up in arms and panic and everybody run around screaming and whatnot and, you know, breaking out the picket signs. We have to learn, according to the code, if we're going to be on this planet, if anybody, white or non-white, a lot of black people think like a lot of white people. Yeah, this black person. You got some black people to go around saying that black people should be punished for doing this and punished for saying that, all like that. The code says, no, let everybody speak. Let everybody speak and say exactly what's on their minds. Otherwise, you get into what I call that what? Sin. Hypocrisy. Stop people from being hypocrites. And the way you stop being hypocrites is to reveal your true self. Let people know who you are by what you think and do and what you intend to do. See what I mean? And that's what you will ask even that coach. If I was talking to him right this minute, and I assume that I am, I'm on the air here. I mean, if I was talking to him directly, I'd say, hey, I'm not talking about jumping up and calling you names and running down the hall screaming and calling you a racist and all like that. The code doesn't permit that. See, that's why I say we need a code. The code says, what do I do when you say the things that they say, that they say that you said? First of all, did you say them? I want to get that straight, word for word. And if he says, yes, I said it, and I meant it, and I'm sorry about what happened to me and all like that, and they punishing me, but I meant what I said. I say, okay, let's deal with that. Why did you, you know, what did you say, and why did you say it? And then I would go into what? Page 171, 172.
Yes, sir. Yes,
right.
Sir.
Now yes. That you have revealed to the world what you have to say about black people, about gays and all like that, okay, so far so good, sir. Always be polite. You're having a conversation,
sir.
Not an argument. And then you say, what do you want me to do? Why do you want me to do it? You know, to correct whatever it is that you are angry about. You know, it must be something I'm doing. He said, what you're doing is being black on my planet. Suppose that's the answer. Okay. Still we're in question and answer mode. That's not the time for me to start shouting and start talking about you don't like black and all like that and don't give them a chance to answer questions. I just say, well, what do you want me to do as a black person who is on this planet? Well, I want you to drop dead. Well, that's something for me to work with, if that's what he says.
Yeah.
I say, well, I'm not planning on doing that, sir, you know, because I think I'm kind of obligated to be here because I am here, all right? And why do you want me to drop dead? And just wait for the answer. And the code says never interfere with the answer that people are trying to give you. Don't cut them off in the middle of the answer. People have a tendency to do that. I see it happen almost every day when I see people discussing something.
Yes, sir.
And they go from a conversation to an argument because before the person can answer, the person who asked the question tries to help them with the answer. According to the code, that's a no-no. You never do that. Never.
Yes, sir.
Let the person talk as long as they want to when they're given an answer to the question. And what I'm saying is that procedure is going to solve the race problem. I believe that firmly. Questions and answers.
Questions and answers.
And all
Got
this
it.
Stuff about CRT and all like that, all it needs is questions and answers. I
Got
can
it.
Go into any of that CRT situation where everybody's shouting and screaming and making signs and cussing each other out and shouting to the top of their voice and spitting in each other's face. All that needs to stop.
Okay.
That's pure nonsense.
Yeah, CR, you mean critical race theory?
Calmly sit down and do questions and answers, and you better believe those 171 on page 171 of the code book and 172, it's going to take everybody right where they need to be.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Justin from Illinois, you are up. What is your question for Mr. Fuller? Go ahead, please, sir. Justin?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on. Go ahead.
All right.
You'll have to cut that radio down in the background so Mr. Fuller can hear your question. Go ahead, please, sir.
Can you hear me? I'm sorry about
yes,
that.
Yes, go ahead.
I would like for him to speak on white sacrificing and the cost of doing business of white supremacy, if he can speak to that. Because I'm seeing a lot more poor whites in the section where black people are, and I just see that's a part of white sacrificing, and I would like for him to speak to that.
Oh, okay. Mr. Fuller?
Yes. Part of the racist strategy is to throw a few white people under the bus. This is to give the illusion that racism doesn't exist. That's the purpose for white sacrifices. Like in any army. See, the white supremacist system, that's an army. You know, that's conflict, okay? It's conflicting with justice. It's conflicting with everything that has to do with helping people who need help the most, which are the black people of the planet, the people who are falling into the water, trying to get to where the white people are so that they can get something back from what they work for, wherever they happen to be fleeing from. Because it didn't leave nothing but chaos. That's what the white supremacists do. They go different places among non-white people, stir up all kinds of trouble, or enhance the trouble that's already there, because there's always a lot of trouble that's already there. They know how to enhance it to their benefit. Then they run off with all the goods, so that you got to catch up with them to get some of the stuff back that they took from you. All right? So that's why the black people all over the world are saying, which way did the white people go? Because they came here, and they fixed it so that we can't repair nothing around here, because they broke everything the little bit that we had, and installed their own thing here so that it won't work. Nothing works here. Because we don't have that infrastructure. We don't even understand it. But they set it up so that we'll always need them. So if we need them, we might as well go where they are. And that's why you have dark people all over the world fleeing where they are from other dark people, just like themselves, their own family members, running away from them to catch up with whom? The white people. Well, why are they chasing down white people? Because these are people that came here and they messed up my house and then went back to their house. So I got to go to their house if I'm going to have a house, because I ain't got one here. They didn't have one. You know, they destroyed the one I had here. So that's the way that works. But now in the process of doing this, they make white sacrifices to cover their tracks. They say, well, a whole lot of white people, yeah, you know, I'm not a racist. I didn't come there and mess things up. You know, look around me. You see a whole bunch of white people sleeping on park benches. A whole lot of white people in tents. Some of them had a PhD at one time or another. Talk to them. You'll find out. Track it down and see if they're lying. They're not lying. I mean, here's a woman, a white woman, out here on a sidewalk in the wintertime in Chicago, on the sidewalk. It's 20 below zero. She's in a tent, freezing to death. Nobody cares. Look at her. Peep in there, unzip it, and look in there at her. She's almost comatose, and she's white. You know, Miss Geneva Albright. That's who she was, a teacher, and fell on hard times or something for some reason or another. And here she is. She's white, and you're a black guy. You're just riding by in your brand-new car. So don't be talking about no racism to me. But see, that's a white sacrifice. Mm-hmm. See, they will throw, white people will deliberately throw 10,000 white people under the bus, so to speak, in order to do what? Deceive. To make it look like that 10,000 is 40 million. Okay? Because that's how it'll come across to a black person's mind. You see one or two white people, or one or two dozen, or one or 200. Or 1 or 2,000 in dire straits, white sacrifices, and you think, oh, it ain't racism. It's just that it's got to be something else. You know, it's got to be capitalism. It's got to be something else. It's got to be some type of otherism. It ain't racism, you know, because I see all these white people, they're doing worse than me. In fact, a whole lot of them are doing worse than anybody in my family. Ain't nobody in my family, even some of my distant cousins, are doing better than that woman in that tent. All right? I mean, cousins I don't even get along with are doing better. So it ain't racism. A lot of black people that think that and act on it. It ain't true. The code mm-hmm. says it ain't true.
It ain't true.
See, the white supremacists are business. Businesses have sacrifices. Like the white supremacists will put white people, I mean, what you call their alpha males. I'm talking about guys with perfect teeth, with perfect stance, 6'2", and who is an expert in everything. I mean, he can do not only just lift weights and do all this physical stuff. I mean, he got 3 PhDs. He's a lieutenant general in an army. And can do everything that a private can do. A lieutenant general, he's white. It ain't nothing that he can't do. Super brain. And you know what? He gets blown up. A roadside bomb. And white people give him a funeral and all like that. But they figure it's worth it for what they're going to get out of it. White supremacy is a business. So all
yes.
they figure is what are the profits and what are the losses. And they tell the white people, hey, buddy, you know, sorry about this, but I'm going to have to throw you under the bus. I'm going to have to send you off to some type of Mickey Mouse war that I'm starting, and you're going to have to go along, you know, and you're going to have to give. You ain't coming back. And the guy said, what do you mean I ain't coming back? I mean, you know, you ain't throwing me under the bus and whatnot. They say, hey, Avery, or Mr. Gustin, or Lieutenant so-and-so, or Colonel so-and-so, listen to me. Read my lips. We're going to have to sacrifice you. It's good for business. It ain't personal. In order to make all those black people think that you are dying in their behalf. But it's worth it for business.
It's worth it. All right.
That's the way it is. That's the white sacrifice.
White sacrifice. Thank you, Justin, for calling. Don't be a stranger. Let's go quickly to Nicole in, I guess it says Missouri. See if I can get you in here. Nicole, I'm trying to get you in here.
I'm still on here.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Okay, go ahead, Nicole. Good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Good morning. Still learning. Go ahead.
Miss Anila Fuller, Apate. Glad you're still hanging in here for us, man. How are you doing today?
I'm still learning.
Right. And thank you, commentator, who's the radio host. Thank you for having the show.
You're welcome.
Anyway,
dear.
Moving on. So I was listening to your conversation today, and the thing that annoyed me, I took the class in college, which was the seven religions of the world, and it's more religions than seven, but it was at Park University, which is in a racist town in Missouri. So anyway, moving forward. So you was talking about the Globe or the award, the Academy Awards, and I said the same thing when I was in college and got in trouble, and he gave me a funky seat. I said, if David, King David, is sitting there with his balls and everything hanging out, as Dr. Wilson taught us, why is his balls in his hand and not on the table helping us to make sure that we all excel into the goodness of a fair chance like they did when they was indentured slaves coming to America? I'm a Blackfoot Indian, and I'm proud. So, moving on, my question is today. I'm trying to learn about my empathy and my emotions of conflict resolution, of how to separate from a marriage and move into an exile of freedom to myself. So until I do that, is there any kind of regain or ritual that I can produce so that I can be able to be safely in my mental thought and not destroy my own systems of breathing within myself?
Well, that's a kind of a convoluted question. That's my fault, though. With most of the callers, I have to keep doing this. I do not comprehend most of the questions. It happens with every question.
Excuse me for the interruption, Neela Fuller, but the one imperative thing I must say. On October the 10th, Kansas City, Missouri has a psych-out thing of saying that they had a mental health issue, a mental health seminar. They lied. It was not a mental health seminar. It was a way to get me into a Scientology facility, which is a religion. So I said, I'm tired of the trickery and the witchcraft already. We need to move into actual learning and classrooms. As Dr. Wilson taught us, if you have a pool table, which is green space, it's like a par on a golf course. So if you're right there on the pool table and you have a black ball, which is always supposed to be the four corners of the earth, process of elimination with the sperm that you are producing, which is a gene, and not the genes that you have on your behind, but the genes that's in your systems. And then you move on to the point of saying that you are mixing up the masses of the races and being married, which is sign language, an M is up and a W is down for Monday and Wednesday. Because we always win it, as women and men. And he was talking about the vajayjay, which is lead me to what they say about Valentine's Day. If Valentine's Day, why do everybody want to go and indulge after Halloween or before Halloween all this chocolate? We're not jigaboos. We're not better than you. We're just trying to breathe and live in America or any other global sustainability and anywhere on the earth. So with that being said, as a young lady, my mama taught me to yield. However, I'm glad that you always said when I first met you on this radio show, which I was trying to meet Dr. Wilson when I moved to D.C., is that even though I'm an elder, if I'm out of place and I'm not understanding me, please, at any cost, still get your point across. So I thank you for yielding that to us and my X generation. I'm not no X generation. I'm the next generation of sustainability in any global environment in which I am. And I want to give a shout-out to Love's Corner, which is Will Love, my cousin. I love him, but give me a trademark up under him. I love that. So now my spirituality and my subconscious mind is now trying to submerge, and I'm not in a tub of water. However, I'm trying to go to my other
tree of learning. Okay, ma'am. So I appreciate all the things you're saying, and I wish that I could make some other contribution to what you are saying in such a way that the other listeners would comprehend what you're saying and the anguish that you apparently might be going through. But all I try to do is just say, each and every day, you just ask questions in whatever setting you're in. You know, any kind of problem you have, just start asking questions about what the problem is and what's causing the problem, and then ask, what can you do about it? And if you can't do anything about it in answer to the question, you exhaust everything that has to do with what you can do something about, because that reaches a limit, particularly if you're a victim of racism, and it reaches a limit about what you can do about anything as a prisoner of war. Then you ask, well, now, since I can't do much of anything that would make sense that would work, is there anybody who can? That's a question. And who is that somebody? All you want to do is solve whatever the problem is. It's not personal. It's business. Now, I mean, just pick anybody out of the crowd, white, non-white, male, female, gay, transgender. Who can solve the problem that you are talking about at the time you're having the problem? That is what everybody on the planet who has a problem wants. People want things. So just keep that as your focus. Everybody has wants, and usually what they want has to do with satisfying a need. And a need is to solve some type of problem. Wanting something is a need. And it is also a problem if you're not getting what you want. And it's a reason why you're not getting it. And if it's something you should have, or if it's something you want that you shouldn't have, you need to find that out. And you find this out by what? The process of questions and answers. So thank you for your remarks, and we'll talk at some other time.
All right, Mr. Fuller, this is the time. We just have a few more moments left, but this is the time when we will discuss, or you will discuss, your book, as the one caller had mentioned that he had just, I guess he had just recently got the book, and he was trying to understand where to go into book or to help him understand it more. So could we address, or rather could you address your book, how you can get it, and all the other pertinent information here, Mr. Fuller?
Yes, I will. And also in answer to the caller's question about how to use the book, there is at the front of the book instructions about how to use the book. That's in the 2016 edition. How do you use this book? It's a pretty thick book, a lot of pages, a lot of things being said. And so there's some guidance there in how to use the book. And you can go to that page and take seriously what you're reading and follow those instructions. You know, I haven't looked at it myself in some time on how to use the book, but the way I use my own book, every now and then, I just pick it up, turn to any page, and look at it and see if it makes sense, and then see if there's something that applies to something that's going on at that moment. And if it's not, I'll turn to another page and see if I see anything. And usually I stumble upon something. At the back of the book, there's a bunch of quotes, just random quotes that I've made at different times, and I just put those in there, a whole bunch of them. And it's just, you know, you turn and look, thumb through them, and you might find something that applies to something that might work for you that particular moment or that particular day or tomorrow when you're going to a certain place and interact with people in such a way. And Or that thought might lead to another page that gives you another thought. And that's how you use it. But you get the textbook, first of all, by going to producejustice.com. Producejustice.com. And what will come up on the screen is a brief description, because the book is written for victims of white supremacy. That's what the book is written for, if you don't consider yourself a victim of white supremacy, the book does not apply to you. Lots of black people say white supremacy don't even exist. So, well, who is this fool writing some book about me being some kind of victim? I ain't nobody's victim. I go where I want to and do what I please. A lot of black people say that. And when you hear black people say that, the book itself says, you don't argue with nobody who says that. You say, oh, you got all your problems solved, so hey, I got a race problem, but you haven't. Well, I'm not going to try to give you a problem that you don't have. So it's no, you get no argument out of me. And so you get the textbook for victims of white supremacy. And I say that on the back of the book, for people who ask for some guidance, if you have a copy of the book, just every now and then, just look at what's on the back of the book. Not about the author, even though that's the headline. You know, I start off talking about myself briefly, but it's about why I wrote the book. And so it's some so-called bullet points. That's a terrible expression, bullet points. They're just points of reference. Just read those points of reference on the back of the book. And that gives you perspective right there about what you should be doing and what the world is like that you're in. Just read that over and over again. It's about 7 or 8 of them there. I haven't counted them recently. But just on the back of the book. But get the book by going to producejustice.com. That's producejustice.com. And also, there's a word guide showing you how to use words, how not to use words, what questions to ask when other people use these words, and just general information on how to think about words that are being used and ask questions about how those words are being used and come up with ideas of how to put the words together or come up with new definitions on your own. You know, you don't like a definition for a word, give it a new definition. You can do that. A lot of people say, you can't do that. Yes, you can. Words are nothing but tools. Tools are to do what? Get a job done. But go to producejustice.com, and the information is there for getting the books. It'll give you some type of guidance through this maddening world that we're in as a non-white person, as a person of color, as a black person.
Thank you.
Black,
so,
brown, red, yellow. Any person who considers him or herself a victim of white supremacy, producejustice.com.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fuller. As we have... we are approaching the end of the program, about 90 seconds here. But I want to thank you callers and your Gmailers and also in the chat room for listening. Thank you for all of your contributions to today's show. Thank you for your birthday wishes to Mr. Fuller, which he did. Thank you. You know, for that also. And we thank you, Mr. Fuller, for your wisdom in instructing us on how to use the book. Even though some of us have had the book for some time, it's still good to hear how to use the book, and particularly go into any section or any page of the book and starting right there reading. So thank you, Mr. Fuller. Thank you, callers. Thank you, everybody. Forgive me if I am, and I did make some mistakes today. I'm going to do that. You know why? Because I am still learning. And not because Mr. Fuller says that, but really, I'm still learning. But we'll try to do better, or I'll try to do better next week. So thank you. Thank you for all the technical people who were in charge of everything. And again, thank you, Mr. Fuller, for all that you have done and being with us. So thank you, sir.
And I thank everybody. Me too.
All right. So we hope to be on the air next week for the Counter-Racist Code Show, Mr. Neil E. Fuller, Jr. Thank you.